tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Welcome to Foreign National on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Seda Nack. And today, my fellow co-host, Eric Boonerang, is not here. So I have Mr. Ryan Kibler, who is our creative director for our company in Foreign National. Can we get a little hand clap here?
What's good, interwebs?
Hey, and then...
I was slow. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Next time, I'll try to prompt you quicker. Today's guest is Derek McCray, who we call Coach, who is a neighbor of ours and the founder of Mission Excellence and the Little League Coach AYT. Which, by the way, did you guys recently change your name?
Yes, we did.
Okay. But I have known Coach for a good several years now. He is also a neighbor in the 20002 zip code. Let's talk a little bit about the first time we met. Actually, you know what? Before we even get to that, I know you're a big football head. I am not. I actually am not a sports person. So we'll get into that considering, you know, I kind of got involved in Little League. But how'd you feel about the Super Bowl?
Hated it. I don't like the Eagles at all.
Oh, God.
Right. I'm a Redskins fan, so I can't root for somebody.
I don't understand people who are Redskins fans. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it doesn't sound like they're ever winning. I don't follow sports, but I never have ever heard Redskins doing well.
Well,
in my lifetime.
I mean, yeah, your lifetime, but my lifetime, yes, they in the '80s, we reigned supreme. He was top dog.
Yeah, I mean, you are a native DC person, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, name's Derek McCray. Born and raised Washington, D.C. Graduated from Ballou High School, which is a little scandal right now.
Yeah.
But they fix it. And 79 to 89, I managed the Junkyard Band, which was formed in Southeast D.C. And then from... In the 90s, I did a little odd jobs, did a little real estate, just that and I did a dab. And then 2001, retired and started Mission Excellence.
Yeah. And so Mission Excellence is where is the phase of when I met Coach. And I used to see him. This is really how it kind of started, is that I moved to Northeast and driving, you know, on that 394 D Street exit, you know, to H Street.
Mm-hmm.
I always passed you and the boys fundraising.
Right.
Holding your little signs up, mm-hmm, and the buckets and the orange and the blues and the middle of traffic, which I know I was like, oh no, yeah. Like if it was like some different kind of neighborhood, you know, people would be fuming about kids sitting in the middle of, mm-hmm, traffic fundraising. But I was like, something's going on. Like, who is this group fundraising? I need to find out more of them. So, you know, passing several times and, you know, say hi, whatever, keep it moving. But it was really good to see you guys just kind of out there, putting yourself out there. I'll see like the boards, Little League team fundraising. And then randomly one day I picked up the newspaper and I was like, wait a minute. I know this dude. I know this man. I see this guy all the time on the D Street exit fundraising for his kids, and you were on the cover of the Washington Post magazine about, you know, not just the work that you do and with the program, but kind of a little bit about your story. And I read it, and I was like, interesting. So this is who he is and what he's doing, because, you know, I think, you know, just really anybody, when you're on the streets, you see somebody fundraising or whatever. Especially nowadays, people are really, really particular about those things. Like,
right,
where's
right.
this money going, mm-hmm, to? Mm-hmm. Is this a legitimate 501c3? And all, and I understand that, you know, transparency and accountability, like in nonprofits, and you know, people are participating and supporting it for the greater good, right? And so when it comes into question, people always tend to, you know, they get really fiery about it. So I understand it, but it was great to kind of see this story about you. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to approach him at this point. And so pretty much I remember it was at the stoplight and I said, where are you guys going to be? Do you need any help? Can I do something? And you told me about one of your games over at Ludlow.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I'm going to see you there. And I started making sandwiches and hanging out with you and the kids. Mm-hmm. And it was just really that small and simple.
Yep. But just that small and simple. And
you're still doing the same thing. And clearly you've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, we've been doing it since 2001. And when I met, we called her boss lady.
True. That's so funny. My daughter actually called me the boss the other day. And I was like, what? She's like, yes, you know, daddy's daddy, but mommy's the boss. I said, ooh, who taught you that? I like that.
That's boss lady.
Yeah, but you know, yeah. And then Ryan, actually, when he was in D.C. at some time a couple of years ago, he came to one of the games over at Fort Lincoln.
Right. Yeah, that was awesome.
As well.
Yeah. It's really special.
Scorching hot. Right? It was actually, I think, a day that the kids were playing like back-to-back games.
We played doubleheader that day. Yeah.
It's like, is this allowed? Is this all, like, it's... Is this safe for children to be out here in 100-degree weather for like 10 hours a day?
Yeah, we were steaming out there.
Yeah, but Yeah, but what you do, and I'll let you kind of get into it. I don't want to, you know, speak for you, but what I really appreciate what you do is, you know, it's not just Little League that you coach. You are with the kids pretty much 6-7 days a week from day to evening, you know, obviously depending on what the school schedule is and programming. But you do more than you coaching. You are literally there.
Yeah, I'm like male figure there. Yeah, I'm a lot of them don't have fathers in their lives. And myself and the other guys that helped me with the team, Keith Rothenberg, my brother Marlon McCray, Eric, your husband,
shout out to EBY.
Hero, he used to help.
Yeah, basketball season.
Yeah, basketball season, Hero comes help. And
Ryan.
And
yeah.
Ryan, he said he's going to help out this year. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, we, you know, we all have to step up and teach these boys how to become men because a lot of them don't have a clue. It is, I mean, all they know is what they see on YouTube or what's in social media. And we need a lot of men that's, let's say, college educated to lay hands on these kids and show them the right way, bottom line. So that's what the program is primarily about. It's about academics first and then baseball. Oh, you didn't tell them about the tutoring we're doing this year.
Oh, yeah. This year, every day, every week at Shopkeepers, Wednesdays 4 to 6, we do tutoring. So if anybody ever wanted to lend a hand, I'm not good at math. So you can come fill in that department.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's something that we do. No, it's great because it's a great time to, again, like it kind of always seems that we're addressing one thing, whether it's like, okay, here's just Little League, but it's always beyond that. Yeah. Here's the homework. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's kind of great to have a little bit of one-on-one time with the boys.
Yeah.
Because I think there's, even with the volunteers that you probably get a lot, it's a lot of in and out.
Yeah.
And I think for me to have some consistency to be there, because you do go through new rounds of boys
every year. Every 4 years.
Every
4 years we recruit. I mean, like, I get them in at 8 and 9, and they leave between 12 and 13. Then I recruit again.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that about, I remember when I helped you coach that one Little League game. We had that one guy, Lil John. Is that his name?
Lil John, yeah.
This kid is like, how old is he? He's like probably at the time.
What is he, like 14, 15 now?
How old was he then?
John, he's going to be like 15. Yeah.
15?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was probably like, what, 4 years ago when I first met him? Yeah. He literally looked like a miniature version of Little John.
His name
is John. His name is Little John. He looked like Little John.
He cut the dreads now.
He cut him?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
No, I mean.
So much. He had really good energy, though, I remember.
Yeah, John's a good kid. He stays in contact. He's in high school, and he made the honor roll.
Good.
He did the honor roll.
Hell yeah.
So.
I mean, I see you really hold the kids to such a high expectation.
Of course.
Which,
of course. There's only three grades, A, B, F. That's it.
True.
That's it.
I never heard that before. That's good.
A, B, F. That's it. It shouldn't be no C's and D's. I'm serious.
That's coach. That's coach for you. But yeah, I mean, let's talk about a little bit about how you even got into baseball and coaching Little League.
Well, I could tell you how. From 1996 up until 2001, I worked in this little after-school program called the Fishing School that was formed by a retired police officer named Tom Lewis. And I went over there to volunteer, and I put it at this time I was injured and I was down, so didn't have anything to do. I volunteered to help out at the Fisher School. It's after school program for kids, you know. So once I hit and got ready to leave, Tom Lewis wouldn't let me go. He said, "We got to hire you." I said, "Okay, all right." When he hired me, he made me coach basketball, football, and baseball out of the Fishing School. That's how it started. Now, like I said, from 96 up until 2001, I was coaching all three. But every summer in baseball, that's when they had the tournaments. And every year, our teams in D.C. was getting killed. We was getting destroyed because the teams uptown in Maryland and Virginia, they worked year-round. We didn't because we was playing all three sports. We didn't focus on one. So in 2007, I just focused on baseball. And since then, they don't want to see us.
That's what's up.
They do not want to see us. I mean, our guys can play. If you give them the opportunity like the kids have uptown, going year-round, get to use these special facilities around. Oh, we got to give a shout-out to the Nats for building that youth academy in Southeast. Big thumbs up to them because we use that facility like 2-3 times a week.
That was the last time when we took Ami to the game. And the baby, right?
Yeah,
They had a snack station. I liked their little snack area.
Shout out to snacks.
They had us. The ladies over there were running it.
Mm-hmm.
And just to put it out there too, guys, the Little League age range is about what, 11? I mean, 8 to 11, right?
From 8 to 13.
8 to 13. Mm-hmm. Okay, 8 to 13.
That's a wide range.
Yeah.
I know, depending on how much of a need of the season is, you kind of squeeze those kids in.
Yeah, because the way I got it structured now is like, during the season, we just preparing them for the tournaments, because the tournaments are in the summer, and you have different age groups. You have nine and tens, 11 and 12s, and then 13 and up, and so they all play amongst each other during the spring, and then when the summer comes, we break them up into the age groups and go play in these tournaments to try to win something. Now this year we trying to make a run in that Little League World Series. This is the third year this team that I have been together, so, and they're pretty strong, so.
Let's
keep our fingers crossed.
We'll see, right? Good luck. Yeah. We'll be following it, of course. And I still, after attending all these games, I still don't know how the hell baseball works. No idea. No idea. Honestly, I just know sometimes they're on the field, sometimes they're not. Like, I don't know if it's a good thing. I don't even know. It's like, just hit the ball. Sometimes you don't want to hit the ball. I don't know, but it's great because I think between all of the sports that you could have chosen, you chose baseball. And you've said it's like it's a gentleman's sport. Is that what it was that
what made me focus on baseball was getting beat up on all those years in the summer in those tournaments, and then about. Let's see, I think it was about 2006, yeah, that's when I was hearing a lot about the concussions with football and all, you know. And then another thing, what I was thinking about with football is, every year that I coached football, I ended up over Children's Hospital, every year, broken bones, sprains, you know. All kinds of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, on top of
everything
else that you...
Yeah. everything. Yeah. So, now, I can honestly say, since I've just been focusing on baseball, I haven't been to the ER yet.
Knock on wood. Don't see it now and then. I mean,
if you know how to coach, you won't have to worry about a kid getting hurt. I'm serious.
Yeah.
If you manage those balls and those bats, nobody get hurt. And have them focused on when that ball is coming to them, have them focused on what they're supposed to be doing. Nobody gets hurt. Right. Yeah, it's been like that. And I mean, since 2007, since 2006, that was the last time I did football, I had no injuries.
There's so much discipline in baseball, I feel like, in comparison. I mean, all sports, of course, have discipline and athleticism, but like especially with baseball, you have to have patience.
You got to have a lot of patience, and you got to have a lot of know-how because there's many different situations out there that they have to learn. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought the dynamic between baseball and other sports was interesting because if you look at football and basketball, it's, you know, like teams against teams. Well, it's groups against groups, but in baseball, the way it's like set up and structured, it's one person against
another. Yeah. I mean, you always get that one-on-one out there
for sure.
Baseball when you come up to bat and when you're pitching.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to hear you talk about baseball, like you are so passionate about the baseball. If the kids are ever going to make it to, you know, what do you call it, the World Series?
World Series, Little League World Series.
Little League World Series.
Well, you got me this year, so this season, so let's do it.
Yeah, it's amazing consumed and passionate you are about that for the kids. And it's great because it kind of gives, I notice it holds them to an expectation, your kids. Keeps them busy.
Oh yeah.
Because it rolls over to everything else. You know, you main the expectation that you keep of them with schoolwork.
Right.
Stay keeping in check with their, you know, their attitudes, their everything. And they're all, every student that coach has ever mentored, the most polite. Yeah. So polite. You really do good things with you, whether it's big or small. But, you know, what's also interesting about you, again, because you're so passionate about baseball when you talk about it, is that you don't talk about your roots in go-go music.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And your movement.
Can we talk about that for a minute?
You are. You're like, oh, cash, no big deal.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I'm just the manager of one of the biggest go-go bands ever.
It's just DC, it's whatever, and super cash. Like, how did this, like, I mean, you've done tours. Some big names. I mean, let's talk a little bit about random and interesting you are.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's go back to 1978, and I'll give you a quick run. This is how the Junkyard Band started. 1978, I was in high school, and after school, I come down to Burney Elementary School, teach the kids how to play drums. All right. And back then, every year, in May, they had the Safety Patrol Parade, and kids get out to the drummers and the major rest, you know, big parade like type thing, and the best schools win.
Wait, a Safety Patrol Parade?
Yeah.
For Safety Patrols?
Yeah, for all the different schools. You used to have that back in the 70s and 80s, early 80s. That. Yeah. So.
I like that.
That's cool.
In 1980, Burney Elementary School won the division. I mean, won for elementary schools. And a lot of the kids that played drums for the school that summer saw this go-go band called Mass Extension come down Bury Farms, and they was playing these roller toms. And they saw that, say, wow. So they went up to the school, went in the trash can, and pulled out the large cans that, you know, the vegetables and everything that come in, fruits and vegetables come in, and lined them up on the fence and started banging on them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, stop banging on them. And then one-on-one got a box, one-on-one got a hubcap, you know, and they just formed a little band. They were just mimicking what they saw from Mass Extinction. And they did that for about 3 weeks. It was going all around from street to street and everything. Then they brought it over to my street and said, Dirk, look what we got here. And I saw it, I was just saying, what the? I said, all right, I got to show this to the world. So I called my guy at WSA News, Bruce Johnson, and he did a story on him. Now, before, it was called a Junkyard Band. They was calling themselves Power. But once Bruce did the story on him calling the Junkyard Band and stuck, and it went from there. So we like so in early 80s we did a lot of I used to call it street go-go's, because we used to do 19th and M every Friday and Saturday, and Vendors Mall on Saturday afternoons. And we did that for a few years, and then one time Rick Rubin from Def Jam saw us, and he was just, man, I got to record you guys.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so got some studio time down here. We did Sardines in the Words, and it went from there. Yeah, so, and so from I say 84 up until about 88, we did well. We toured the country. Our biggest tour was with this band called Big Audio Dynamite. We started in Austin, Texas, and finished in Boston. I mean, we started what, right after Thanksgiving, and we finished the tour about 4 days before Christmas. We were able to come back home. And during the tour, we had a stop here in D.C. at the Bayou in Georgetown. Yeah, we did the show down there. But our favorite spot was in Austin. Austin, Texas. Oh, that was phenomenal. Loved it.
Yeah, I heard Austin's a good city. I mean, do you miss those days?
No.
That was a fast no.
No.
What?
That was a fast no.
I do not miss it. Look, I like sleeping at night. When I was doing that, I was, shoot.
Yeah, toilet
day started. My day started 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon because I was up all night. Oh, it was, whew. When you do that for years, it gets tiresome.
I mean, what caused you to stop? What was your transition? What was your next phase after music?
I was a bad boy. I was a bad boy. I was doing, yeah.
Everybody has a phase.
Yeah, I had a phase where I was, yeah, selling drugs. Yeah. It was ugly. It was ugly.
Yeah, but I mean, all those experiences is why you are who you are today. Yeah. You know, so.
And, but, yeah, I left the band and then went full time doing the other thing.
Yeah.
It was.
It's for all of you that don't know what go-go is, you want to explain to them what go-go is? It's very important as a DC.
Okay, go-go music is a music that is focused on bongos or kunga drums and drums constantly playing through a whole set. Never stops. That's go-go music for you. And you know the change, because the guy that's leading the band will tell you about the changes and everything. It just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. But now they got this thing called bounce beat music. And
it's funny because Pharrell is like probably, and the Neptunes are one of a big reasons for bounce right now.
Yeah.
And Pharrell, I've heard plenty of interviews where like they are talking to him about, you know, his process and engineering and his referencing from other types of music and drum kits, and he always goes to go-go because he's a VA boy, so he remembers going to these, you know, community centers and hearing those percussions and those drums and feeling that energy, and he tries to take that as a reference and translate that into some of his music.
Yeah.
So
Well, just about all the music that you hear.
Absolutely.
You hear some go-go in it, I'm telling you.
No, Questlove from the Roots. Like you hear some accents over there.
A lot
you hear
of
from
that.
Everyone.
Yeah.
It's just so funny because like some people are like, some people say DC's not a progressive city, but it really is. And
yeah, I
and
mean,
we've definitely especially with music wise.
Yeah, but far as go-go, it only sells inside the Beltway.
This is so true.
Only sales. And
why do you think that is? Like, why?
I don't know. I mean,
do you think it's
because the people in this area can relate to it. If you don't live in this area,
right,
you can't relate to it. I mean, you connected to it. That's why it only sells inside the Beltway.
Do you also think it is the record labels think it's only primarily marketed towards a certain type of demographic or race too?
No, it's not that. It's just a lot of them don't understand it.
Right.
Because they're not from the area.
That's true.
That's it. Bottom line. Now, most major labels, when they try to sign somebody, they want you whatever is hot at that time, whatever format is hot at that time, that's what they want you to do.
For sure.
That's how it is. That's how it is.
Well, so, if you ever come to DC and you walk past any barbershop on U Street or in Southeast or in Northeast, you will hear Go-Go.
You're going to hear Go-Go music. Yep. You're going to hear Go-Go. You're going to hear
it. It's funny. Marvin DC recently just reprogrammed their downstairs, and they have a Go-Go band sometimes in there. Uh-huh. And I was talking to the general manager, and Marvin's like a poppin' place, and like a lot of people go there uh-huh. from different age groups and different backgrounds. But she says every time there's a Go-Go band, it's the busiest night,
yeah.
and they get the most guests off the street coming in there, and yeah. a lot of them are like neighborhood
yeah.
folks and yeah. and people, which is I think is super cool. You know, like it's still relevant to people oh, yeah. who know what it is. And
oh yeah, well,
how often are they doing that?
I think they do it like once a month. Yeah, oh, we should go see it. Yeah. We all should go.
You could take me out.
Yeah, coach. I think that's super special, though. I mean, anyone that's from DC and is about DC knows about Go-Go. And
oh yeah, that's the roots of DC.
Like so, Go-Go. It's funny because some of my friends who are DJs will still play that in the club.
Oh yeah.
Like shout out to Jerome Baker and Spencer Tracy. Like, and when they play that, like it goes off. Like. Yeah. The club, you know, like
yeah.
there's more of a reaction to that to a Go-Go song than there is to like the new mm-hmm. rap that's coming out.
Yeah.
It's very popular amongst yeah. the youngsters.
Now, you know, in the 80s, no major artist could come here and perform without having a Go-Go band on their ticket. You know that, right? That's the way it used to be.
And I just think it's so cool how you just told me the story about how that band happened, how they literally took those buckets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And put him on a fence. I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Fence. So he's probably got all other sorts of secret gems of knowledge in there. That he's just like,
forever.
we'll just pick yeah. it up on 3 p.m. one day. Just like, oh yeah, did you know I know this? And you're like, interesting, coach. I didn't know you knew that one as well. Of course you do.
I have a question for you. So as a community leader and as someone being, born and bred in DC and seeing the changes, how do you feel about all the changes that has been happening in like H Street, the gentrification? I feel like that's a subject that I want to hear from someone who has been through all these different phases of.
And you're okay. also you've overseen generations
exactly
through all of these phases.
Right. Like you saw the riots and everything.
You have, yeah. you have right. kids. You have kids yeah. that are adults with kids of their own.
Right. And yeah. I have some. Like I said, I got kids that came through that's adults now, which I'm coaching some of their kids now.
That's
so,
crazy.
But
because, before you answer the question too, because I know you because I know how much of a neighbor you are in that neighborhood, is that you have been able to kind of see probably both sides to it, where part of the benefit is opening up your organization and the work that you do to see the positive changes of that, whether your neighbors that have moved into this neighborhood to see the benefits of it, not that that opinion would matter at the end of the day, but kind of being able to potentially gain more support for what you do, but also the reality of what gentrification kind of costs to the neighbors and the generations of the gentleman that you have put through your program, you know, and the families.
Yeah. Well, as far as how I feel about the changes that have been made in the area, I love them. But they're pricing the middle class out of this town. That's all I'm going to say. I love the changes. But they pricing the middle class out. They can't afford to live here anymore.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, you've seen it take effect in your own students.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Called me and said, hey, you know, so-and-so's family is getting evicted.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen a lot. I'm still seeing a lot. And like when a family take a fall like that, that's when we step up.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, who's ever involved, you know, we gotta spend a lot of one-on-one time with them, you know, and show them, you know, it's gonna be all right. Just stay focused on school. We got you, you know.
For sure.
Right. And you're such a great example of some of that overwhelming feeling that a lot of people get, especially in this political climate of, like, I guess what people are saying of, you know, being woke or whatever it is, in whatever other terms that they want to use towards, of like, is this a time where I step up and make a difference or a change? To me, it's like, this is a great example of, look at your neighbors. What do they need?
Right, look at the community.
Let's just start there, you know.
Yeah, it drives me nuts sometimes with that whole movement. Not to like complain or anything, but like when people post stuff on Instagram and they have a voice or they have a strong message they want to relay through social media, but then, you know, I follow up with them and they're not doing anything or giving back in any way. They just have this like, I wish people were more like Coach, where like he's creating this program and he's giving back and helping these kids that come from, like, you know, broken homes and not the best situations. And,
I mean, the kids that I coach, they come from all many backgrounds,
right.
Many situations.
Yeah, I could tell. Yeah.
You know, some of them are doing great, and some of them not doing well. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's just, you know, you got a million different personalities, and you have to learn how to deal with them, and it's not hard.
Right.
It's not hard, but you just got to focus on the kid. Let the kid know that somebody cares, and they will be productive.
Right, and I think that kind of goes to the frustration, you know, Ryan. It's like, I think the best we can do is like, hey, you know what? That's okay. Take that, channel that energy, just look around you, and there's going to be some gems in your community that's going to give you an opportunity to make a difference.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Your presence has to be felt. You have to be there. You know what I mean? You just can't come for 1 minute and then you're gone.
Yeah, that's what they're used to, you know.
But you gotta be consistent. If you're consistent, you can watch a kid grow and become something. Because like Jonathan. Wow.
Oh yeah. How is Jonathan?
Well, you know, he's a big time manager out in Arkansas now.
Oh wow.
Hey, for Enterprise.
Oh man.
He graduated college, got his degree, and got a big job at Enterprise out in Arkansas.
So. That's awesome.
No, he's
I
great.
Mean, he was. I mean, he's this kid come
graduated
from
graduated.
Yeah, his background was horrible, horrible. But I stood in there with him.
Well,
the way through college.
Let me know when he comes to DC. You got to bring him around.
So I will.
Give him a big
hey,
hug.
When he comes, I will.
Yeah, I mean, I know you take your day by day, and that alone is just like, to you, it's nothing. You just existing, and I appreciate about that. About you, Coach. So thank you for being in our lives and being such a root to me in this Northeast DC neighborhood.
Nah,
you
but,
to me.
No,
are,
but thank you for yeah. you and your husband. Lord have like, come on now. I got to come on. Y'all one of the best things that ever happened to Mission Excellence. I'm serious.
That's so kind of you to say that.
I'm sick, but it's the truth.
You are doing me favors. We can go another round.
You are a true you are a true influencer in my mind. You know what I mean?
I'm serious.
No.
I mean, but
you're so funny. We're going to go with Jackson and be like, I'm about to fade you guys out.
We're about to get the Oscar music.
You know what, though? I will say, and I close this out every time on one of the shows, and it has to go with me giving me one of my thanks, too, is you always bring me some Doritos and Cheetos when I need you. You will always roll up in your van and be like, you got to need Doritos. I'm so hungry. But this one is about you. What is your favorite snack? Because I saw you sneak a Twinkie the other day, and I have never seen you. For as many years that I've known Coach, he's a particular eater. Eats at the same time, the same kind of meal. And last week, I saw him eat a Twinkie. Unless you were giving it to somebody else, I was shocked, but I had no time to actually stop you to ask you what you were doing. So what is your favorite gross snack? Or you can just give me a real snack.
Gross snack. Will be the lemon snaps.
What the hell? What is
I
that?
I like those.
The Girl Scout cookies?
No, it's a. You ever heard of ginger snaps?
Yes.
Those cookies?
Yes.
Yeah, they got lemon snaps.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Those are my favorite, and the kids love them. I have to make a special
trip
to get those.
The kids just love snacks.
Yeah, they love those, but I have to get them.
Who doesn't love snacks?
I have to get them every week.
I don't trust people that don't like snacks.
Yeah, well, they get a snack every day after school. if they're doing what they're supposed to do.
I mean, they roll in with Gatorade's and bag of chips, so I think they're doing pretty good. Before we leave, too, Ryan, real quick, what's your favorite snack? Since you're our little guest co-host.
It depends what time. There's so many things that involve this. If it's late at night, I always go for salt and vinegar chips.
Okay.
And then if it's candy, it's like anything sour. Like, I love sour gummy bears. I love, I remember those. What are those things that were super sour?
Warheads?
Warheads, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're too sweet for me. I like them. When I was pregnant at one point, I loved sour candy. If anybody is interested in supporting Mission Excellence, Coach, how do they contact you? You need to update a website.
My website's fine. Okay, I can be reached at
just the email.
MissionExcellent@gmail.com. That's how I can be reached.
Mission Excellent.
Yes, excellent.
I know E-N-T. This because it's on his organization in Mission Excellence.
Yeah.
His email is Mission Excellent.
Yeah.
@gmail.com.
Yeah, because somebody already had Mission Excellence.
Okay. You know what? That's going to be our goal for 2018. We're gonna help you work on that.
Yeah, I got you.
All right. Thanks so much. We're gonna redo
the site, huh?
maybe not the site. Maybe just your the email situation, right? But you know what? People already know how to contact you that way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Word.
Right. Yeah, it'll work.
Thanks so much, Coach.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.